Yeah, I've asked for a microphone and a few things around me, because if someone ties my hands, I can't speak. And if I had to hold the mic in one hand, I'll only speak half as much. So remember that. Anyway, so I'm gonna speak on the unforgiving servant. And I didn't bring a Bible. I've got all these notes. I am completely out of sync of what to do next. So I just borrowed this real, this is my diary for work. I didn't know what else to bring. At least it looks important. So I'm going to, and I didn't bring a Bible because my Bible, the print's too small. My iPhone is a bit sick. So I don't even have that. So I'm back to old school printing. I'm going to read from Matthew chapter 18, verse 21. And it is assumed that this conversation was taken place at a time when the disciples and Jesus was away from the crowd. And for the reason is that Peter comes up and asks him a personal question, something that Peter has obviously wrestled with in the time leading up to this. And so we can assume that Peter will not ask this question if there's a crowd. And if there was a crowd, then Jesus would have been ministering to the crowd and to the disciples, of course. So I'm going to read from verse 21. And then Peter came and asked Jesus, "Lord, if my brother keeps sinning against me, how many times do I have to forgive him? 7 times?" "No," Jesus answered, "not 7 times, but 70 times 7. And then Jesus continues, "Because of the kingdom of heaven, it is like this. Once there was a king who decided to check on his servants' accounts, and he had just begun to do so when one of them was brought in who owed him millions of dollars. The servant did not have enough to pay the debt, and so the king ordered him to be sold as a slave with his wife and his children and all that he had in order to pay the debt. The servant fell on his knees before the king. 'Be patient with me,' he begged, 'and I will pay you everything.' The king felt sorry for him, and so he forgave him the debt and he let him go. And then the man went out and met one of his fellow servants who owed him a few dollars. He grabbed him and started choking him. 'Pay back what you owe me now,' he said. His fellow servant also fell down before him and begged him, 'Please be patient with me and I will pay you back.' But he refused. Instead, he had him thrown in jail until he should pay all of his debt. And when the other servants saw what had happened, they were very upset. And they went to the king and told him everything. And so the king called this servant in. 'You worthless slave,' he said, 'I forgave you the whole amount that you owed me just because you asked me to. You should have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you.' And this king was very angry, and he sent him to jail to be punished until he should pay back the whole amount. And then Jesus concluded, he said, 'And that is how my Father in heaven will treat every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart.'" Let's just pray. Father, I thank you that you reign and rule. I thank you, Lord, that you are in charge. And so, Father, today I pray that you will speak to our hearts. I pray, begin with me. And Lord, as we continue to look at your word, I pray that you will do in every heart what you would have to do in their heart. And I also pray, Lord, that my words of my mouth and my meditation, my heart, will be pleasing to you. So, getting back to the story, just briefly on the storyteller, Jesus is the one who tells the story. And in this scenario, we kind of put it that they're by themselves. They don't have the crowds there. But the storyteller Jesus had a mission to bring the kingdom of heaven to earth. Now, the kingdom of heaven was probably something that was not talked of in the culture of that day, because the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the priests and the prophets were probably more concerned with controlling the crowds, making sure that the Jews were adhering to the law, and that was kind of where the stage was set at. And Jesus came to share the kingdom of heaven, because he starts off by saying, and the kingdom is heaven, and then he tells us a story. But Jesus would then use parables as a story type message, easier to remember, and he would present this kingdom by himself being among the people. He would teach this by physically be out there teaching them. When he's in the synagogue, he will be teaching. When he's in the temple, he would be teaching. And then he would show the kingdom by actually healing the sick and encouraging the folk, the local folk. So Jesus was very different. He was not like the other rabbis of that day. He did not go to the temple to select junior disciples to follow him. You know, the disciples that would have gone through a Bible school and through the who can recite the Torah at the age of eight and stuff like that. He went to the local common people, and there he looked for his disciples, people who would not have qualified in anything. He went and found fishermen. He wanted nothing to do with the learned of the day. So he is very different. So he picked these guys and the 12 disciples for, you know, to be his disciples. But none of them qualified in anything, except Jesus qualified them. Jesus said, I want you, and I want you, and that's how he chose them. And of course, it got everybody else's hair in a mess, because this is not how things should happen. And another thing was about Jesus, he would spend time with the local people of the land. He wasn't interested in hanging around the temple all day long. He wasn't interested in sitting at the city gates and look important. He avoided those things, but he went and looked for those that are in the land. So to speak, we can say that he kind of walked the land, but he was looking for those that are poor. He was looking for the unjust. He was looking for the destitute. And those are the people that he went and searched for to share the gospel with, the kingdom of heaven. Anyway, getting back to the parable, Peter is the one asking the question. Peter was the one that actually opened the can of worms. We understand that Peter didn't expect what he was getting. He was just hoping for a yes or a no. But anyway, Peter was a guy that was very different again from the rest of the team. He did things that no one else would do. He would say things no one else dared say. He got out the boat and walked on the water. And I can imagine that at that time too, if he was in his group of disciples, he probably would have mentioned, you know, no, 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 none of you got out of the boat. I did. You know, so Peter was the one that, well, if you look at Peter's life, it's an amazing, a very, very colorful life. But Peter asked this question that nobody else wanted to ask. And Peter obviously would have struggled with this issue of forgiveness. And he thought that he'll offer an answer as well as the question. And for him to offer that answer, he would have had a lot of time thinking. He would have a lot of time had a look at it. And he would have thought, yes, I think, this is the gospel according to Dion, I think that he thought maybe twice, but because I'm going to ask the master, I'll bump it up a bit. I could get more brownie points. And of course, we know the result. So Peter came and asked him the question, and he said, Lord, if my brother sins against me and continuously sinning against me, how many times should I forgive him? Seven times? And then he was waiting for the accolades or the well done, or the, but he didn't get that. You see, Jesus said, not seven times, but 70 times seven. Now you can do the math. He's probably wrong by about 483 or something, if he were going to go by a number. But anyway, and that's all that Jesus says. He didn't give any explanation. And then he goes on to say, you know, the kingdom of God is like this. And then we read the story of this king who went and did an account and found this guy. You know, he found this guy who was in trouble. I mean, you know, he was absolutely, completely sunk in debt. There was no ways that he had anything to repay that with. My thought was that he probably didn't have enough life left in him to serve it out. He just, there's no way that he could. And this is the enormity of his debt. So he was seriously in trouble. Even his family was implicated. I mean, the king said, we're going to sell your wife and your kids. I can imagine going to Tammy and say, babe, I'm in so much trouble. You're going to go up for auction. Look your best. I don't know if that's... And then when she gets over that, well, should she get over that? I'm going to go to Woz and say, Woz, I just have to tell you, the king has commanded that you're going to go up for auction too. And then so is Melanie. So look your best, you know. And of course, then the three boys. Can you imagine? I'm so glad that we live in Australia and the Australian standards are a little different. But that was the severity of this guy's his predicament. But thankfully, you know, after his begging and pleading for mercy, the master relented and forgave him everything. He was just... Then he was in serious trouble. Seconds later, free, and free indeed. Now this is what mercy does. And this king didn't consider anything. He just saw this guy, had compassion on him, and said, don't worry, you're off the hook. Done. Don't you just love it when mercy shows up? I mean, it's hard to understand. Even the English language is a bit lame to try and describe what went on here. This guy went from a pauper to a rich, rich, rich man in a few split seconds. That's what mercy does. That is what mercy does. You see, from in 1 minute he was kind of, you know, his life was living where he was living in this place of debt and debt and debt, and in the back of his mind he would have known that no ways, it's got to end somewhere. It's got to, and he doesn't know. He doesn't want to think about that. But right now he's living on the luxury of the king, and he's got everything that he wants. Never mind the debt. I'm living with all of this. So he would have had this in the back of his mind. And mercy shows up. And all of a sudden, you know, going from bragging about his king's money that he's spending, he has gone from lapping up the fact that his lifetime dream has just come to pass. He's free. Everything that he's done is now his. Everything that he has had is now his in a matter of split seconds. And, you know, all because someone's mercy and compassion. I mean, I'd love to just end it here. It's fantastic. I just love the story. I remember when I got saved, it was a bit of a case where I didn't think I was young then. Now I can tell you I was young. I was about 30 years old. Yes, I was 30 years old. And if I think back now, 30 years, well, you probably only have about 10 years of stuff that, you know, after you leave school and you kind of live as you think that I'm now free to fly, is what the kids say. And so you didn't have real too much stuff, but still that stuff was on the back of my mind constantly. And when Jesus, when I gave my life to Jesus Christ, and the guy said, "That's it. The stuff that you now have or you've done is now His." I remember praying, "Lord, I'm so sick of trying to organize this life. I'm so over it. Everything I do, I mess up. I try and be nice and it gets screwed up. Take it away. It's now yours." And I realize that freedom of, it's over. And I think this is how this guy would have felt. All of a sudden, he was free. But this parable, there has to go on. And so this debtor could say, he could truly say, "I have made it." But I think he got a bit greedy and wanted more. And I'm not saying, and I don't want to say or make it sound as if you have stuff, if you have possessions, if you have riches, if you're a rich man, I don't want to make you feel bad or say anything against that. God says he wants us to prosper. He says that. But so to have stuff is one thing, but to have the stuff have you is another thing. And I think this is what's happened here. This guy probably could have forgiven this man owing him a lot less, but not so. You see, this guy here, he wanted more and more and more, and somehow I think he might have thought that there's security in that. And then you and I will know very, very clearly that there's absolutely no security in material possessions. You know, Jesus calls us home, and we're gonski, we're out of here. We're out of here, we're done with this, you see. And so I think he ended up, we know what happened to him, but he ended up making a bad decision because of greed, okay? And he ended up as being sent to jail. So, and again, if you have made bad decisions, don't think you're going to end up in jail. That's not what I'm saying either. So whatever the this story is a good yardstick for me when I make decisions. Is a good yardstick. So I might not end up in trouble, but it's a good way to look at it. Anyway, so in this whole story of Jesus, the whole story that Jesus was saying, there's two scenarios. The one scenario is being merciful, graceful, being loving, and lavishing mercy on someone who do not deserve it at all. In fact, we will never know if someone deserves it or not. We might think what we think, but it might not be the truth. But Jesus said to be merciful to whosoever, whether we know it or not. So the one scenario in this story is the fact that to be lavish with mercy and not withholding back anything. The other scenario in the same story is where you have received a ton of mercy, but you refuse to pass some on to others. And then there's a caution that Jesus puts at the end. You'll notice that at the end, when Jesus finishes this parable, I remember when I've read it several times, and the first time I read it, I thought, was Jesus grumpy? Because he says nothing. He just tells a story. And then the way he says, "And this is what will happen to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart." I thought, was he grumpy? I don't think he gets grumpy. We get grumpy because we don't have our way or we don't understand things, so we get grumpy. But he understands everything. So it can't be that. But he was very short and stern with that comment. And so those are the two stories. And this second part of this parable describe clearly the hurt that is on display from this gracious king who was being let down. If you read, he was angry. He put this man in jail, not just in jail. Some Bible speaks of to be tormented. He owes millions. And if it's going to take him 10 years for the king to get the money back, he's tormented for 10 years. The version I read said punished. So, and this is what was there. So this guy who was forgiven an incredible amount of debt could not bring himself to the place where he will forgive someone else. And also it shows a disregard for the clemency that he's received, the graciousness that he's received. And that brings hurt to the one who poured out this mercy. Unquestioned, just poured it out. You see, and then if I can take you back to a place in the Bible where grace was, it's probably for me the most profound place in the Bible where mercy was poured out. And that is at the cross of Jesus Christ. Now, while they were nailing Jesus to the cross, and this was probably before the cross was upright. Sorry for the detail, but you know, Jesus was there, probably lying on his back, knocking nails into his hands. I don't know if the other two criminals was already on the cross. I don't know that. But during this, and it was probably midday-ish, but during this time, there was a lot, there would have been a lot of noise in this little arena with this event. A lot of noise. There would be commanders calling commands, and the soldiers would be busy with what they were doing. There would be mourners. There would be, the disciples would have stood afar off and watched. People would have been crying. It would have been a noisy event. People, you know, it was just worse than a trade market. But there's Jesus being nailed to this cross, and he utters a prayer. And he says, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." You know, he is more concerned about the perpetrators, about their sob, than what he is about the agony and the pain that he was going through. I don't get it. Father, forgive them. Forgive them. Father, pour out your mercy upon them. These guys, they haven't finished the deed. They are still busy nailing him to the tree, nailing him to this cross. They haven't finished. And he's already saying, "Father, give them mercy. Pour out your mercy on them." I don't get it. The fact that this prayer was even recorded, that this prayer was heard in all of that noise, is something that just astounds me. But you know what? If God wants you to hear something, doesn't matter where you are, you'll hear it. Doesn't matter if there's AC/DC full noise in the background, you will hear it. And so this is the scenario. And this scenario at the cross, of course, changed life forever for us as we know it. And you know what? Father, forgive them. We like to think that the them are the perpetrators. But I think it's more than that. It is them who are present there. It is the disciples. It is the temple staff. It is all of these people. All of them. None of them serving God, but receiving this mercy. And then the them is me. And it's you. And it's you. And you. You see, this event at the cross took place approximately, we're guessing, about 2,000 years ago. I was not around, and probably most of you were not around. But what I want to say is that Jesus knew Dion before he created him in his mother's womb. Jesus knew what he was going to get up to. Jesus knew about all the people that he was going to hurt. Jesus knew every sin, every sinful